5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8:02. Happy New Year. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today we are so excited to have Race Talks in the room. We are joined by Donna Maxey, Tony Crummett, and Leslie Gregory. They're all people that work with Race Talks and other projects as well. And we thought to put this show together because we got the press release about Portland being the number one city in America. So Portland is the number one city in a number of ways, isn't it? So anyway, welcome to Donna Maxey, Tony, and Leslie Gregory. Thank you so much for being here. And I'd like to go around the room and have you talk about the work you're doing with Race Talks because it's grown. And you have wonderful events coming in January, and I know people are going to want to go. So, Donna, can you start?
Yes. Our Race Talks, we're in going into our fourth year.
Wow.
And we have, we're at McMenamin's Kennedy School in the gym. We meet from 7 to 9. We have 150 seats, and each seat usually has a bottom in it, so you need to get there early. Doors open at 6 o'clock. People can come in and get beverages and food. I always think that it's good for people to talk and commune over food because it gives you indigestion when you become contentious, so it keeps things smooth.
It's all about being nice around the table.
It is. And what Race Talks is about, and it's a little bit different than a usual talk about an issue of race, we have for the first hour, we have speakers or a film, and the second hour, we have facilitated dialogue. People who are trained to lead dialogues, and Tony and Leslie are among those people. And they are trained to lead the dialogues so that it's a safe place for people to talk. So we've had a number of topics ranging from the first year, year one, we talked about this is race 101. These are people of color, African Americans, Arab Muslim, Asians. I particularly like the Asian one when we did that because it was so funny. All these people that we call, quote, Asian.
Yeah.
Outside of the United States, they're not Asian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're Eastern Indian, they're from Thailand, they're from the Philippines, they're their own nationality. But here, they're all Asians. And so, you know,
the constructs we make to describe each other to understand things, but they don't really do that.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And I was joking with one of the people and saying, gee, you've really changed over time. You've gone from being Caucasian, because she's Eastern Indian, and they were termed, when I was a child, they were Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And now they're Asians. Now they're people of color and they're Asian. And I said, wow, I'm waiting for sprinkle dust, you know, magic dust to fall off of you because you've been able to change who you were just, you know, in a few years.
But that's what's so interesting to me about this story about Portland being the number one city in America, because first of all, who's asking? Mm-hmm. And that's whose right. frame is it on that? Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that the person you're talking to has always been who she is.
Yeah.
Right? And her family's always been who they are.
That's
and
true.
Suddenly, like, somebody's, I want to say frosting changes on the outside. You said fairy dust. And I was looking at that story, the stories about Portland as the number one city in America, and it was a designation that a real estate company made. Mm-hmm. So in other words, and I don't mean to be rude, and this is horribly rude, it's like the gentrification machine says, yay, Portland! Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm
exactly.
saying? So, Donna, though, you guys have some amazing... talk a little bit about Race Talks, too. You took it to the school district. That one fascinates
right.
me.
Well, we're doing... Where I went to the school district, the city of Portland Public Schools is doing equity work, mm-hmm. Courageous Conversations in Race, which is kind of the genesis for Race Talks because I was teaching at the time and part of Courageous Conversations in Race at my school, Cesar Chavez. So from that, it just kind of, you know, spirit sets things up to happen, and it just kind of all fell in place, and I was introduced to Tim Hills from McMenamins.
Tim Hill is the McMenamins historian. He's right. Amazing. That guy knows everything. A lot of stuff about a lot of stuff. Yeah.
So when you go into McMenamins and you see all these historical pictures or little doodads on the wall that have to do with the building or the area, Tim is responsible for all of that. And they had just opened up the Chapel Pub on Northeast Killingsworth and around from Jefferson High School. And I went in, talked to Tim. It was part of a group. I was invited to come and talk. And Tim ended up asking me if I would do a history pub. They work with the Oregon Historical Society and every month put on a program about the history in Oregon. So we did a history pub, urban renewal, urban removal. And I talked about the emotional impact that, quote, gentrification, urban renewal had on my family and my community. And from that, there was an upswelling of support. People asked about it. We started Race Talks. Well, Race Talks has been such a success. As I mentioned, we've had every seat has had a bottom in it, and there are people standing three deep at the back wall, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay.
Because so it's been standing room only, and so it's been very well received, and people have been wanting to know, could we have more? Could we have more? Mm-hmm. And the idea, as far as I'm concerned, is to get Race Talk to be spread all over, because we need to be talking. By the year 2040, there will be more people of color in the United States than there are white people. We need to be talking to each other.
It's happening now, and that's the part that fascinates me the most, too. And I want to jump and say, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're talking about Race Talks, and Race Talks 2 on January 7th has I Can Fix It, 5 Things That White People and People of Color Can Do to Fix the Racial Divide. I think that must be coming out of the training that our wonderful friend Damali Ayo did years
she
ago.
She did.
That's January 7th at Jefferson High School cafeteria starting at 6:30. Here's a real big one that I think people should really make room for on their calendar. January 14th, Race Talks, No More Pushouts, Stopping the School-to-Prison Pipeline. Huge issue. That's a really big issue. I really want to just call that out. And people, if you're sitting at home, understandracism.org is where you're going to go to find out about the Race Talks events and how to plug in and stuff like that. Can we go around the room a little bit more and just find out a little bit more about the work that Tony and Leslie does? How about Leslie? Mm-hmm. You're all the way from Hillsborough?
No, that's okay. Tony.
Okay, good. I'm getting geographically, because we should talk a little bit about racial isolation in Hillsborough. It's an issue.
It is.
But anyway, go ahead, Leslie.
So I practice medicine in Selwood, and I started a nonprofit to address health disparities because I think the racial disparities are directly connected to that. And so what I'm trying to do is use a multifaceted approach to address the racism that underlies health disparities. And for the first time, we have excellent data, reproducible, excellent data that really spells out the way in which racism is the underlying cause for early African-American demise. We have heart disease that is killing people of color at, in some cases, 4 to 5 times a higher rate. And with this tremendous data, and one of the best places to accommodate and to access this data is a series of excellent videos demonstrating how racism has actually undermined the health of people of color. And with that, there's no longer this sort of, gee, we need to study that more. We now know. And the series of talks is called Unnatural Causes, and it directly relates to how racism undermines the health of pregnant women, for instance. Mm-hmm. We know premature birth is a higher rate, and we have some tremendous facilitators and mentors doing work in that area. And so what we're trying to do is put together all these different approaches to address the underlying cause of health disparities, which is racism, as well as healthy behaviors, cholesterol control, diabetes control, hypertension control. And we want to do this in a multifactorial way, and that's where Race Talks comes in, because we need to train facilitators to have actual, deep, meaningful conversations, not just, gee, I'm sorry this is happening to you. Gee, I'm sorry that you're a person of color. And I think one of the things that Race Talks is really excellent at is to demonstrate those ways in which majority culture frames people of color in a way that makes life more comfortable for them. And I think that's exactly what Donna was just talking about in terms of, gee, this person used to be Caucasian, now they're Asian. And this is a matter of comfort for majority culture to say, let me label you in this way. This makes me more comfortable. This makes me more seated in my privilege. And so that's another word we use quite a bit, is unearned, unrecognized privilege. And this is one of the things that a person who is not of color can use to help frame their own filter as they look at the world around them. Let's just examine my own unearned privilege. And in that way, you get a little of the humility back that's required for true humanity. And that's why we also, the Dalai Lama and some of the other leaders, thought leaders, compassion leaders in our world, are brought into the fold, their philosophy, their peace, their desire to uplift and humanize, rehumanize humanity. That's the underlying need that we all need to get to help address this issue.
This is a really interesting issue because in this past year, I read an Associated Press article about how it was a big deal that more African-American medical researchers had been able to get funding for studies that linked specifics of racism and racist oppression to specific health outcomes. Mm-hmm. And there was a great Associated Press article about that just about 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Very specific researchers. And so the issue, there's a couple issues on the table with that. It's like, so we're sitting here, we're talking about the work that you do with Race Talks at understandracism.org, where you're bringing people with different kinds of backgrounds to a table, and you're just trying to get people to talk to each other, literally. And I know that there are people who say, well, talking doesn't change anything. But what we're talking about is relationships, actually.
Exactly.
So one of the interesting things, the ramifications of when actual African-American, specifically African-American researchers, were able to get into a lab and get funded for this research, part of the point of why that was important was how many white gatekeepers and the larger medical establishment were saying, oh, that's all anecdotal. I don't even want to talk about that. You can't prove it. It's not science. That's what they would say.
Exactly.
It's not science. And so, you know, and I, again, but the way to turn that tide was about getting actual people into the chairs to do the work that was reflective of their community. And I really want to see that happen in Portland. We look at City Hall. I mean, there's some awesome people of color working in City Hall. And I know for a fact that people that I know in that position are not, they don't feel that they're able to move forward on their community agendas, the things that they want to see happen with our communities of color here. And if we don't figure out ways to reach into the police bureau, I'm saying that, into the police bureau to where the African-American officers are. I don't know if there's any African officers in the police bureau yet. If we can't figure out ways to reach into these institutions and support the people that are trying to make change in their zone, we're not going to have success. But we tend to demonize people who are in an institution. Oh, God, it's the police bureau. Boom. Bad. You guys have done some amazing things.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Donna's talk with the Portland police was absolutely brilliant, as well as so many other leadership organizations in the community. For instance, Portland Parents Union and some
Sheila
of the work
Warren.
With Sheila Warren.
We have
Lawrence.
Had her
absolutely.
On these airwaves. Yeah.
So we have this brilliance out there. The idea is, particularly in Portland, where people of color are a micro-minority, is how we refer for African-Americans, 6% of the population. And I think that's the other part of what we want to talk about when we talk about Portland as the best city. It's also the whitest. And what does that mean to people of color who hear, again, another message that white is normal, white is better, and persons of color are just not? And so I think those are some of the messages that we send without intention.
Yeah.
I think some of them are very unconscious, but understand they become conscious to people of color after a period of time. And I think that's a big part of what we're trying to address, as well as the health outcomes associated with that.
Very specific things, relationships and actual measurable outcomes.
Exactly.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with organizers from, I'm sorry, I'm spacing out here.
Race Talks.
Race Talks. Yeah. Is it New Year's Day?
Right.
It's New Year's Day. It's New Year's morning. And I want to bring Tony Crummett into the conversation. You're a facilitator. And Tony, talk a little bit about your work and the patterns that you see when you are in a room, you're sitting in a room in Portland, Oregon, with people from different racial backgrounds and white people too, having to have a productive conversation about this. Because I know that people do that at work, right? They do it at the gas station, and they may not feel very satisfied with the outcome. Mm-hmm. Talk about your work and what are the issues in facilitating like a multiracial discussion here in Portland?
Well, first of all, at Race Talks, there's a guideline for facilitating. So it's really helpful if you happen to be at Race Talks and you're at a table that doesn't have a, quote, trained facilitator, unquote, there is a guideline for you to be able to have a respectful and productive conversation that you're alluding to there. My training is through Uniting to Understand Racism, and that's how I got hooked up with Race Talks and found out about it and began attending. And when we're at the table, I would say that typically there are more white people than people of color at the table. And so one of my jobs as a facilitator is to make sure that it isn't that every question and every comment isn't directed to the person of color, as for example, for them to be the expert at the table, which, I mean, obviously they are the expert at the table, but there can be some fatigue around that, like always turning to, putting the person on the spot, if you will. And so trying to make or help the conversation or the dialogue continue to be about people telling their own stories and speaking from self and making that authentic. For white people, and I will generalize as a white woman in the skin that I'm in, I will generalize to say that on the journey of awareness that we're all on as far as building our understanding of racism and the impact that race has on people of color and the privilege that we have, the unearned and many times invisible privilege that we have as white people, that it's really important as a facilitator that I can kind of call out in a gentle way when I see that being expressed or something, the lack of awareness, if you will, is being expressed in some sort of way in order to help the person become aware of how what they said or what they're talking about, the experience they're talking about, is coming across and what that might mean to people of color, what it might mean to white people as well, as far as
because it's so dangerous to sit there and say what you really think, you know what I'm mm-hmm, saying, and I'm sure mm-hmm, that the people that mm-hmm. are motivated to get up out of their houses, turn the TV off and come out to McMenamin's, which is a really nice space by the way, and sit there, it's dangerous, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. we're so white Anglo-Saxon people are so based on guilt. I'm just putting that out. It's interesting how it's just interesting all of the, you know, in my mind I think of it as, you know, people that work with gems and they have those vibrating water tanks and they mm-hmm. put all of the mm-hmm. stones in there and they rub them together and some of them just disintegrate. Some of them come out looking really pretty. Some of them are just mud. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I've had people say to me, people of color say, this is the first time I've ever spoken out to someone other than my own ethnicity and said exactly how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it felt good. Mm-hmm. And then I've had white people who have said, I really, and this is at Race Talks I'm speaking mm-hmm. of, and I've had white people who have said, this is the first time I've ever spoken up and said what I wanted to say and ask questions mm-hmm. and not feel stupid and not feel afraid to ask those questions because it's a safe place. And I know that no matter how inappropriate or naive my question might be or my comment might be, I know that it will be okay mm-hmm. and accepted here and it'll mm-hmm. come out okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that Race Talks is about. That is the main thing that we are about, is bringing together for that that intercultural, interracial relationship and opportunity for folks to get together. Mm-hmm. And to feel safe while they're doing it.
All right. Mm-hmm. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're talking about Race Talks, the program that it's been around for, we said, four years. It's growing, actually. Regular meetings where you come and you, it's almost like the antidote to Yahoo News reader comments. I'm saying that. Yeah. And we have a caller. Listen, callers, 503-231-8187. Have you had some courageous conversations lately? And also, callers, I'm just curious if you've got any New Year's revolutions or ideas about that, because that's part of the point of bringing some of these really insightful people on the air here on New Year's Day specifically. It just strikes me that I meet a lot of people who identify as white, people who, I can't always tell who people are by looking mm-hmm. at them. I'm just going to come out with that. I can't always tell. A lot of times you can, but trying to figure out, I just want to say, I know a lot of people that identify as white who really want to do something productive and they don't know how to plug in, and this is the place. So we have a caller. Is it Joanne? Joanne, how are you doing this morning? Joanne?
Yes.
Thanks for waiting, honey.
Never mind, Lisa. Thank you for thanking me or whatever. You know what? I'm just overloaded. And, you know, people are so into computers, into connecting with each other. And anyway, so I got to let go of this annoying energy about technology. But anyway, I've been talking to myself lately about not calling into cable anymore. Maybe the last place in my world or the world to, you know, to say something, even though it, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. I've been talking to myself about not calling in anymore, because it seems like elitism and classism has taken over cable too. And you know, I'm a low income person, so what? I have biracial grandchildren. Who cares? They're suffering as well. Also, your programs sound so nice and so intellectual. But you know what? To me, as a low-income person and my life experience, it reeks or feels of the gentrification and the elitism that's taken over this country and is making me mentally and physically sick. Bye.
All right. Okay, so Joanne, thank you for calling. And I actually hope that, as far as Wednesday Talk Radio, I hope you continue to call, because I think that, Joanne, frankly, I think you bring up some of the hard questions and their pots are bubbling over and you stick them on the table. And I really appreciate that. So I want to bring Joanne's question to the table. So here, Joanne, meet Donna. Donna, this is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. And Joanne, just so you know, I'm African-American. I am the proud descendant of slaves and the kings and queens of Africa. And there's a few white people thrown in there, too, I'm sure, and some Native Americans, too. But since I don't know all of these folks, I just claim who I want. And and I'm a former teacher, and you mentioned that your children were suffering, and you mentioned the elitism of racism. One of the things that we try to do at Race Talks is make sure that we have a variety of speakers that come. Mm-hmm. And yes, as a principal, most of the people who come are college educated and highly college educated. But having a college education doesn't mean anything. That means you've been exposed to certain things. Let me tell you, when I am out here in the world, people don't see all my degrees printed on my forehead.
Exactly.
They see a black woman with gray hair.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter how many degrees I have. I still have to come at that world. You mentioned that your grandchildren are biracial, and who cares? Well, I care. Mm-hmm. I have a biracial daughter, and I want this to be a better world for everyone. My daughter happens to be biracial. I happened to marry a man who was white and Jewish, my husband, but that was not an intentional thing. But the reason that Race Talks is important, and the reason that it's important that we have these talks, is so that your grandchildren can be safe. Out of Courageous Conversations in Race, which started here in Portland Public Schools, now I see it happening. I don't know where you live, but it's happening all over Oregon. And it's out in Gresham, it's out in Hillsborough, it's out in Beaverton, it's in Happy Valley. It's a lot of different places now that they're talking about race. And the school districts have formed an alliance. What that means is that teachers are getting trained. Now, it's one thing to get training. It's another thing to absorb that training and to make it your daily practice. And we can intellectually absorb some information, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to do it in practice. But it means we at least have that information there and we can start working on it. And it is important that these conversations happen. If you come to Race Talks, you can make connections with people. Leslie mentioned that she is in Selwood, and she's out in the Clackamas area, too. And Tony's in the Hillsboro area, and I'm in Portland. Come, talk to someone. Mm-hmm. If there's an issue that is going on, then you can get someone who is there at Race Talks to come and talk to you. We have all kinds of people mm-hmm. who come to Race Talks. Okay. We have people who have lots of education, and we have people who have no education. So please come and know that someone will help you with your issue.
And you don't have to have a computer.
No. You don't. I just wanted to also thank Joanne for calling in, because it really highlights one of the important aspects of what I'm trying to do with my nonprofit work, which is to focus on exactly what she said, literally. The environment here is making her feel unwelcome. And what her last comment was, is making me sick. And what I'm saying is, as people of color, we very rarely are able to turn that light back on ourselves and say, how is this impacting my health? And the goal is to not only highlight the work that Donna is doing, which is brilliant, pivotal, cutting edge, but also to take those opportunities to learn facilitation, to learn how to not just focus on my own pain around race, but also to see those ways in which I can lift others up with me as I acknowledge my own pain and as I start to reach out into the community and interact with others who may feel the same way or in a safe space may feel exactly the opposite. But I think one of the things we know, well, several of the things we know about racism, number one is it hurts everybody. People of color,
one of the things
majority
that really gets
culture,
me about it too. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think what's going on is we have a lot of injury in this country around racism that even white people aren't able to specifically identify in their lives. And the facilitation training that you can learn at Uniting to understand racism, and you can see demonstrated at Race Talks, and you can interact with, actually is empowering and addresses that underlying health issue in that it gives you an out. It gives you a way to let it out and to communicate with other people. I think the other important thing that I love about Race Talks is we are training every day how to be better people. When you participate in dialogues like this, you learn from other facilitators what it looks like to make a safe space, to make it okay to say, you know, gosh, can I touch your hair? You know what? I don't want you,
to touch my hair.
but here's the important part. Yeah. It's not just no. It's no, and here's why. Here's what you can do to learn more. Here's how we can both heal the injury that racism has caused to both of us. And I think that's the important part, that if white people can begin to understand the ways in which the matrix of racism that we live in, and it is literally just like the movie The Matrix. It is a completely...
It's construct.
It's confabulated. Yeah. And so I think if we can just strip away and take that red pill and go, okay, reality is ugly. It's painful. It's not a good thing. You can go beyond that pain and say, okay, but what can I do about it?
Right.
And that's why I really appreciate Joanne's call, because what we're saying is, Joanne, the make me sick that you're feeling, you know, it's time to take the red pill. You're not alone. You know, there are other people out there going, this isn't a healthy environment. Why? And what I'm saying is, when a country is founded, the very foundation of that nation is kidnap, rape, torture,
murder,
slavery, murder, you know, colonization. When a foundation of a nation is on that heinous basis, then all that comes after will have that poison, and we're just trying to heal the poison.
And I also want to say, so Joanne, Right to Health Incorporated. Right to Health. Okay. And she's right here in the Portland metro area, Leslie Gregory. I want to give Leslie's phone number out. Is that okay with everybody? 503-653-5522. That's Right to Health. That's Leslie's nonprofit. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. It's New Year's Day. What are we doing? We're awake. We're awake here.
We're making changes. We're making it a better year.
You know, and it's true. And the number to call people is 503-231-8187. And we actually, let's go to the caller. We have Jackson on the phone. Jackson, what are you thinking about today?
Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, honey.
I'm more fascinated in the movement of Anglo-Saxon guilt specifically. And I tell you why, as a male. Because women have had to historically, through the many years, deal with oppression. And growing up as a male in the United States of America, I was taught and I was conditioned to be a little sexist. I was conditioned to be sexist. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was just doing what I was conditioned to do by society. At some point, I questioned it. In the beginning, I felt guilty. But when I started to change my behavior and started to do whatever I could to help that woman achieve whatever she wanted to achieve, then my guilt went away. And I said, well, I'm not a part of the problem. I'm a part of the solution. So my question is to Anglo-Saxon America, Caucasian, whatever title we want to give ourselves, because in the end, we're all human. But I'd like to really understand the movement behind the guilt and whether or not the guilt is self-perpetuating or whether or not the guilt is unfounded or whether or not the guilt... You know, shouldn't be there at all. Hmm. You know, a quick example is a person who works at a bank. And this is a very nice person. They are not a racist. They're not visibly racist. They may even have a couple of black friends. But they always make sure to give that brown person that bad upside down loan to such a degree that it got so bad that it turned into a major class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is that? Why the guilt is there, or what? I would like to hear from that side because I'm still trying to understand it.
Jackson, I have the response to that, and it's weird and it's complicated. So I am a middle-aged white woman, okay? And I've been I work at an African American newspaper, and my boss loves Ancestry. And in a hallway conversation, she said to me, "Oh, go to Ancestry.com and just figure it out." And I flew over there, right? And I've been on there for a year, mm-hmm. and it's really changed the way I look at the sweep of human history. People that have heard me talk about this are sick of me saying it, but I'm going to say, Jackson, that what it looks like to me is that, you know, as Leslie was talking about, the cradle of what we consider to be our civilization, what many people consider to be our civilization in the United States right now, and some people don't consider it to be civilized at all, that it was all created by, you know, violence, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure in human history where people have moved and where that hasn't happened. I don't know enough about the history of humans all over the galaxy, but one of the things that strikes me is, okay, United States, right? The colonies, the so-called New World. A lot of that stuff was stirred up by corporate interests and government interests. Mm-hmm. The Dutch East India Company was a corporate interest. It was not a government. And they grabbed control over what they thought. Anyway, so they had a financial gain. And I just think this is the most mm-hmm. important part of it. Mm-hmm. There's always a financial gain in this equation somehow, one way or another. Sure. And I personally believe that, like what Leslie said, this system that we live under was never meant to support everyone. It was never meant to serve everyone. It was never meant to benefit everyone. And we all know mm-hmm. that there is literally, like the phrase is, the 1% at the top that plays everybody else off against each other. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, one of the ways they do that is that people that are in the white majority, the white majority, we get more, we're paid off. We're paid mm-hmm. off to mm-hmm. perpetuate that matrix mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that Leslie was talking about. I think that's where the guilt comes from. Mm-hmm. And so we, all of us know that we know we have more sugar. We know we do.
Okay. So this really isn't about race. This is more close. This something is closely related to tribalism.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
it's more than that.
And the race mm-hmm. is just something that was created by European intellectualized, but this is really tribalism is what we're talking
and
about.
I do want to say what you just said. So I believe that in the year 1620, the colonial government passed some kind of rule that gave indentured European servants. There had been people that were brought, white people that were brought to this country, you know, in the early days mm-hmm. that also did yeah. not have their freedom. So, but the, specifically the colonial government, and I do not believe it was the British government, which theoretically controlled the colonial government, but they passed a law that said that the enslaved African people did not have the same rights as the indentured white people.
Well,
boom.
Yeah, that's
it was
true,
a moment in history.
Also, well,
it was a divide and conquer moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jackson, I wanted to share something with you because there were two things that helped me as an African-American woman to be free of a lot of the pain of racism. And number one was watching animal shows. My second husband, who was African-American, loved animal shows, and so I, you know, hey, you got to hang out with who you're with, and so I started watching them too. And what I noticed was that the behavior of the animals was exactly mm-hmm. what we as human beings do. And then I realized
yes.
this is mammalian behavior. Now,
yes.
nobody has really studied the fish to find out, or the insects. They seem to have a little bit different way of what they're doing. But this mammalian behavior, it's just amazing. There's a hierarchy. And I remember one
especially
particular show.
Especially in the baboon. Especially
well, no,
in
all of them. In all of them. There was,
yes, ma'am.
There was one that was particularly telling. It was on the, I think it was the island, is off of North Carolina. I want to say the Gullah Islands or something like that. They had horses, wild horses there. And they this woman followed all of these horses. And what was so amazing is you had the lead stallion and the lead mare and their colt. And they would come up to water or to food, and they ate first. And then everybody went down the hierarchy, who was the top down to the very last. And the weakest male and female and their colt ate last. Mm-hmm. And there was very little for them. And when you looked at the one at the top and the one at the bottom, the colts, the poor colt
well.
Was almost half the size
exactly.
and very weak and eventually ended up dying. The other thing that freed me up, so what I understood is that this behavior is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
This
well,
is the behavior.
No.
Wait a minute. It's not personal. It's not. It
no,
doesn't have.
It's not personal.
It doesn't
this
have
is,
Donna Maxey's name written on it. It doesn't have Donna Maxey's name written on it.
Uh-huh.
So here's the second one. I worked at Nordstrom's. And I had a lot of experience in retail, but people didn't know that, and they thought I was a lot younger than I was. And so I started in stock, and then got put out on the sales floor, and people went crazy because my sales were great. But I started noticing they were picking at me all the time, the other salespeople, where they weren't just picking at me. What I noticed is they picked at whoever was on the top of the heap, whoever
they
was making the most money.
By you because
well,
you were doing an outstanding job.
Right, but here's the piece that was interesting. They didn't mind if the manager and the two assistant managers got top sales. It was the salespeople, those of us who were down there all equal on the bottom, that were fighting each other mm-hmm. and vying for position.
Exactly.
And it didn't matter. And what I realized is that this isn't about race, because we had different ethnicity of people in there. They didn't, whoever was making the top sales, they mm-hmm. were trying to pull them down. And then the person would get upset and they'd get depressed and they start pulling back, and then somebody else would come and make top sales and they'd be happy that that person would dispose, but then they'd start picking at the one who was there. So what I realized is that the isms, racism, sexism, classism,
sizeism.
Ableism,
yeah.
sizeism, you pick a ism. These are about eliminating your competition for
human
goods
adaptive
and services.
Behavior, theoretically, mm-hmm. human adaptive.
Getting rid of your competition. And if horses could have a collar or something that they could make and put on, then they would be doing it too. Mm-hmm. So it's not.
It's almost like a type of Darwinism. Mm-hmm. It's like survival of the fittest. Take the weak out of the bunch.
Yeah, I think that too, Jackson. I would also say, and this is an excellent opportunity for you to look at how you can make a change. I think the issue is, it's unconscious. The point is, it's unconscious. If a horse is doing it, then it's unconscious on a human level. The issue is to make a change, and the change is what? To bring it to a conscious level.
Talk
to
about
just
it.
Make it. Make
relationships.
Conscious.
Yeah.
Look at it.
Come
think
to
about
race
it.
Talks.
That's right. And the other part is, and I would really urge you to try this, Jackson. It starts in the mirror. It starts in the mirror. You cannot change the world around you. All you can do is look in that mirror and go, what can I make different about my life? What can I do differently in my life? And I think that's where the health aspect comes in, because those micro messages you get on billboards and bus sides and commercials and magazines that you're not even conscious of, telling you that white is okay / normal, person of color is not. And I think that's where you need to become more conscious about those messages you're getting.
No,
and
I
you may be.
DNA,
you
DNA
may be, absolutely. But again,
I
we're starting in the mirror about what you can do. And I think that's the underlying.
Jackson, okay. I really appreciate your calling. We have a couple more callers. Yeah, I hope you call again. And it was really a pleasure.
Come to Race Talks.
Have
yes.
a great day.
All right. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. And you know, just another thing. So Jackson brought this up, like, where does all this come from? Where does the guilt come from? Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I learned, I had a bunch of breakthroughs with my family tree just over this vacation because I spent too much time on it. It made me run back and look again at the Massachusetts Bay Company and Anne Hutchinson and the Salem witch trials. Did you know every one of these situations, there was someone there saying, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Every single one. There was no situation where everyone agreed what was happening. And I think that's important too. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Leslie on the phone. Leslie, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning. Happy New Year.
You too.
First of all, I would like to say the biological argument that we are all built for domination and to devour each other. There's also altruism and cooperation exists in nature. And I think that people need to look at the political agenda of these nature shows. And I do think there is a political agenda to the nature shows that constantly demonstrate animals devouring each other and operating in hierarchies as if that's the only model there is in nature.
Instead of the chimpanzees that have been shown to cooperate with each other in different kinds.
Exactly.
Although I do see shows about that, too. But go ahead. I hear what you're saying, Leslie.
Go ahead. I would like to say is, you know, talking about people always think that racism is about the past and we're so angry about the past. I mean, if I had to just start from last week, I would have more than enough to be pissed off about.
Ooh, there you go.
Really?
I mean, when I think about my interactions in the world, and I'm not a quiet person. I am perfectly willing to make a scene. I'm very well educated. I'm working my way up to my doctorate, and I plan to start my own business because I've finally realized that that's the only way I'm going to have a just employment situation is if I run it. So that's what I intend to do. But as I operate in the world, and I can, like, you know, the multitude of times I will have someone, like, almost run their car into me, usually a Caucasian, frequently a young person, and they'll give me this little fake smile like they didn't mean it. And even if I'll stand there shrieking at them to back their car up, won't back their car up. Or someone trying, having someone follow me around, an employee in Winco follow me around the store until I turn around and scream at them at the top of my lungs, "Hi, how you doing?" And then back off of me. I mean, these are things where, you know, I really have to get in someone's face to let them know that I know what you're doing and I'm not going to put up with it.
So I have to speak to you because I have people follow me in the stores too. In fact, when I started at Nordstrom,
and I will embarrass them.
Well, you know what? I do? I embarrass them too, but in a different way. And I'll say, "Hi there. Do you work here at the store?" And then, yeah. I said, "Oh, good. Well, since you're following me, why don't you come and be my personal shopper?" Mm-hmm. And you can help make my trip go a lot faster. And so I make them come and shop with me.
I love that engagement.
Yeah.
I love that.
And they're so embarrassed. And it's like, oh, good. And now you can carry these things, too.
Thank you.
And then I don't have to get angry. Because that anger, one of the things that I found is that that anger has a detriment on me and my body and my psyche.
Again, that
and
health.
It makes me sick.
Absolutely.
It made me sick. And so when I started doing that, when I started doing the thing of where I engage them and let them know, I know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. Come on, let's call it what it is. Mm-hmm. And didn't let them get my goat, because I didn't let them take control of me by making me get angry. I took control of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I would leave there cracking up, just falling out.
Do you remember when Portland Police Chief Charles Moose had a rage attack at the Nordstrom rack because he was accused of shoplifting? Right. He was the chief of police. Mm-hmm. And there was a big escandalo because it was all about, would he release how he was punished for doing that, because he was punished by the police bureau for doing that. Leslie, what do you think we should be doing in 2014? I got to ask you, what should everybody be doing in 2014?
I would like for white people who claim that they're conscious to start calling other white people out. Because when I do these type of things, it's like silence. And I think there's kind of a social cowardice overall, both in Portland and just in general. Like, if I see someone in a wheelchair let's use the example of Winco again. They've got one of these store carts and it's not working. Mm-hmm. I'll have to be the one to call a staffer to help them. It's like all these other people, most of them white, like the person in the wheelchair, will just be walking around this person, mm-hmm. ignoring them. I'm always the person to get up and give my seat to an elderly person, usually a white person, 99 times out of 100. It's just this social cowardice.
Mm. Interesting.
Keep Portland passive aggressive. What are all the things Portland's number one in? Passive aggression. Leslie, thank you for calling, and I hope you call again. I really appreciate your comments.
Good Race call. Talks.
As she says, go to Race Talks. Let's take 1 minute and go back again. Let's find the website. UnderstandRacism.org, and we have Race Talks coming up on January 14th at the McMenamins Kennedy School Gym. That's in Northeast Portland from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and that's the one about no more pushouts, stopping the school-to-prison pipeline. You know what? Our community leaders that are working on pushout, these people are real, and they are not gentrifiers, and they're not Wonder Bread people at all. So I really super highly recommend that people get involved in that one.
Also, at the February Race Talks at McMenamins will be around the issue of the prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. The Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will be coming, and some of their people will be making a presentation. Someone said, do I want someone who's going to discuss the other side of the death penalty? And my answer is, no. What I want to discuss is that there are alternatives, and also to discuss the fact that there, most of the people in prison are people of color, mm-hmm. in particular African-American males, mm-hmm. and that it starts January in the schools with the pushouts. The pushouts meaning lots of suspensions, expulsions, mm-hmm. which guides them right into the prison system. And then in March, we have Keisha Edwards, who has developed a program, a set of cards called Playing the Race Card. Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's a deck of cards. And we will play the race card. And mm-hmm. there are instructions, a definition, and then instructions on each card.
Keisha Edwards, who just opened a new antique store mm-hmm. on Hawthorne Boulevard this year that has a lot of art supplies. I'm not plugging that place.
No, mm-hmm. I sure appreciate that you're not plugging Keisha's shop on Hawthorne.
There's great. There's parking right
and
there.
And Keisha is a very talented woman who has worked for a number of organizations, Portland Public Schools and Northwest Labs, to name a few, and has done her own independent work and has been a presenter for Race Talks in the past. So we are going to be playing her deck of cards, and bring your money so you can buy a set.
Yeah. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We've got 10 minutes left in the show. We've got two callers. We are live in Studio 2 with Donna Maxey, Leslie Gregory, and Tony
Crummett.
Thank you. It's New Year's Day, and many of us were awake last night. We're talking about Race Talks. It's an incredible program, and you know, the thing that also strikes me about it is, and Joanne, I mean, it is important that people will say, you know, are you guys just talking? What are you doing? And yet when you work to give people the tools to build relationships, that's what I see you doing. Mm-hmm. And you're building relationships between people. I think a lot of things that happen in the Portland, Oregon metropolitan area are things that happen among people that have each other's cell phone number. That's just me. I think that's how stuff actually happens. So if you're a do person, you might consider going to Race Talks and meeting people who will be your allies in whatever you're doing. Because if you're an organizer, I'm just going to humbly suggest that these are the people that would help you do what you're doing.
And I need to say that it's kind of tough to get into McMenamin's. Mm-hmm. It's a neat place. They have food and everything. Jefferson, we haven't developed the food process over there, but there's a much larger room.
Jefferson High School.
Jefferson High School.
Yeah.
And what we're doing at Jefferson is we've started the process over. They're in the first year at Jefferson, so we're in the introduction to these are people of color. This is race. These are people of color. Year one. Next year at Jefferson, God willing, the creek don't rise, we get the funding from the school district, we will be going into this is racism. And then the third year program that we just finished at McMenamin's was these are the effects of racism, and now we're getting more into more effects of racism. Someone says, well, you should start these over, and we have suggestions for it. My thought is, come to Jefferson, and then you can hear some of these programs. There's a system to it.
And there's also, I believe, that all of your race talks are podcasts somewhere.
Yes.
I think that you have recordings people can go
recorded,
to.
They're recorded, and they're on YouTube.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So we have 8 minutes left. We have two callers. Let's try to cycle through the callers. I'm sorry, Carrie? Harry, you're on the line. What's going on, Harry?
Yes. Greetings, everyone.
Greetings.
Good morning.
Yes. I feel why racism is still being perpetuated is because of conquest and war. What we did to the Native Americans, and of course, people forget that we took half of Mexico, and the indigenous people, either if you were Mexican or Indian, you couldn't vote till 1965. So, do you mention anything about Native Americans, or what we did to the Native Americans and the Hispanics or Mexican Americans?
Harry, you are going to have a wonderful future learning about race talks.
Yes.
We're cutting you loose, and we're going to go to the next caller, but Donna's going to answer that really quick. Donna?
Yes. When we talk about race the second year, we have some films that we show, and I just went blank. I can see the picture from the films. But anyway, there's a series of films that will talk about race. And we do have Native Americans, do have speakers that are Native American that come to speak.
Typically, groups of speakers come. There's two or three. And
right.
They're amazing individuals, really. People, Harry, that you can meet and you can go up to after and make a connection with them. And I think that's actually the real point. So let's go to that last caller real quick and just try to get him on the air. We have Edie on the phone. Edie, what's going on with you today?
Fine, thank you very much. I would like to answer Joanne and a caller who's asking what's behind the guilt by giving some quick overview of what's behind that emotion and other emotions, the history of why it was exploited because of the consequences and what we can do about it.
Okay, in 2 minutes
okay?
or less. In 2 minutes or less.
Guilt is thinking that there is something that someone needs, that is their right, that we are violating. Fear, and behind that is fear that something good and right that we need, we will not have. And what we need is, through that sense of we are connected, we're all at one, that what happens to the person happens to us, what we do to someone else hurts us.
Mm-hmm.
And so a response to that fear, which is under the guilt, in response to the guilt, is to try to avoid it. By avoiding it, denying it, pretend it's not there, projecting it, blaming someone else.
Very
a way
true.
To get out of that, instead of being guilty, because I don't, in my devout Christianity, there is no such thing as God giving guilt, because in nature, there's only learn and adapt. So if something's uncomfortable, take your hand off the stove. You don't feel bad about it and do, you know, like I'm going to feel guilty that I'm eating all this crud and I'm not gaining weight. You either choose to eat and gain weight, or you choose not. you know. Mm. So instead of guilt, which allows you to be dishonest to yourself, you just act on meeting your needs of oneness, of integrity, of compassion, of empathy with other people, and of feeling agency and power. And the way I often do that on a day-to-day basis, if I have to call someone about a product, a change, you know, the phone bills like that, I refuse to give in to the office talk that was translated into English. What in normal trials they said, how could you get away with, you know, didn't you feel uncomfortable? I said, no, we didn't. We felt very, very comfortable because we just use bureaucraties. We have to. It's the job. So whenever I'm talking with someone, I am affirming prayerfully and in their face that they have a conscience. They have a mind and a heart to make their mind.
Edie, I got to cut you loose, and you just made about 13,000 fabulous points that were completely fascinating.
Yep.
I really hope you call again. That was so interesting what Edie just did there. Mm-hmm. She was like, first you have these feelings, these bad feelings about, I like the way she linked need and fear, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I had never thought of it that way. But then she drew out a whole bunch of positive family values, and I wish we could have spent a little more time thinking about those, which goes back to the criticism that I believe Leslie had about animal shows on television. But then Edie went straight to the bureaucratese language, and I think she's right. Mm-hmm. Like, the way we talk about these things to each other absolutely impacts our deeper thoughts. So look, we're running out of show. We have to start closing this show down. So I want to give the talking stick to everybody one last time. And so I'm going to start with Leslie. Leslie, what do you think? What do you want people to do in 2014? And how can people plug into your work at Right to Health?
That's a great question. And I also appreciated her comments, because I think the issue underlying was what we're promoting here is ethnocentric medicine. We need to be treating each patient, each person, each individual, each soul we meet as an individual, looking at their ethnicity and background in that context of humanity. It's about how can we all be edifying and bringing up each and every one of us based on each and every person's need, whether you have a need or whether you have something to share. And I think that's one of the underlying foundations of race talks, the way racism hurts white people as well. And the issue is, it really, we'll all suffer apart, or we will all flourish together.
Oh, it was such a great... I got to give you... what do you think? What do you think?
Okay, this is Tony here, and my last little bit I'll say is that do come to Race Talks. There you will build relationships, you will build your awareness, and also you will learn how to recognize microaggressions, the things that you need to speak up about and how to speak up about them, and also you'll learn how to be an ally, and you'll get some practice doing that, hopefully.
All right, and Donna Maxey.
Okay, come to Race Talks. First Tuesday at Jefferson High School, 6:30 to 8:30 in the cafeteria, and come to McMiniman's on the second Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. Both of those open early. McMiniman's, the doors open at 6. You can come in and purchase food, network, get to know folks. At Jefferson, the doors open at 5:45. So come in, get to know folks. I'm going to be working on getting food at Jefferson.
All right.
So hope to see you all there. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really want to wish everyone a happy new year. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Donna Maxey, Donnie Crummett, and Leslie Gregory. More on their work at understandracism.org and mobilizeforhealth.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nassar and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on kboo.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Happy New Year, you guys!
Good morning, you're tuned to KBOO. The time is 9 o'clock, and it's time for Political Perspectives. We'll get to that momentarily. In the meantime, at 10 o'clock this morning, it's Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein, your host. And at 11 o'clock, it's the KBOO Bike Show here live in the studio with news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Happy New Year's to everybody out there, and thanks for listening to KBOO Community Radio. If you're not a member, why not start the new year by becoming one? It's so easy. Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Next, we go to TUC Radio with Paul Grignon as on a show called Money as Debt, an update of the 2009 film on radio version by Grignon. That's coming right up. Stay tuned.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Money as Debt. A radio program based on the soundtrack of the first film on banking that reached 2 million downloads and was praised by Catherine Austin Fitz, David Corton, and many more. Money as Debt by the Canadian Paul Grignon makes the case that only a small portion of our money is created by the government mint that prints or coins it. The vast majority of money is created by banks whenever a loan or mortgage is made. Banks, which are private institutions, are given enormous power to make and manage money, and it is well worth today to look at the monetary system. The film begins with a quote by President Woodrow Wilson as he attempted to regulate the banking system. He said in 1913, "Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it." Woodrow Wilson, The New Freedom, 1913. Later in this program, you will hear another quote by Wilson, where he says what a terrible mistake it was for him to sign the Federal Reserve into being. Here are two more quotes to lead into the movie, Money as Debt. The process by which banks create